Today on the 10-12 podcast, listener questions are answered. Who we're rooting for in the NFL playoffs this weekend. Plus, Texas Tech softball head coach Craig Snyder joins the show for the first time. It's our official kickoff for the Big 12 softball season. If you want to know about the tumbleweed contest and where it came from, we've got the answer for you today.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. And of course, we are partners with Sport Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. Go check out their fantastic lineup of podcasts. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us for our midweek episode. Today, the day this drops, is January 25th, 2 weeks until the start of the 2024 college softball season. I'm very excited, as you all know. Seriously, first games of the season start Thursday, February 8th. Multiple teams in action. Oklahoma will play games. Oklahoma State's got some. BYU, UCF, Iowa State on that Thursday. Very, very, very excited. Which is why we're kicking off our softball coverage today. One of the coaches I did not get on the show last year, Coach Craig Snyder, Texas Tech softball head coach, will join us here shortly. We got a lot to talk about, how they're going to play some of the hitting from last year, his view of the new 10-team Big 12, 10 teams in softball. And if you haven't seen the post on social media about the tumbleweed contest, it's very West Texas. We're going to explain where that comes from. So stick around for that fantastic interview. I love getting to talk softball. I'm so excited for college softball season to be here. I'm ready for spring. That also means spring is going to get closer. I'm tired of the cold and the gray and the wet. Here in Arkansas, it's been foggy and gray and rainy. And I just, like, after a while, I need some sunshine, y'all. Folks, it just drains me. I need a little bit of a pick-me-up. I do. I asked for some questions from people on Twitter, and I got some. We're going to get to those here in just a minute. There's a few things I want to touch on before we do those. Number one, first, it was Nick Saban retiring. Now, Jim Harbaugh finally takes the leap back to the NFL. He gets Michigan to a national championship. Now he's headed back to the NFL to take over the Los Angeles Chargers job. Why do I mention this? Because, of course, Chris Klieman and Lance Leipold's names have been mentioned in tweets in regards to this opening. Look, Kansas State, Kansas, I think you're fine. Sharon Moore is going to get this job. Current offensive coordinator, the guy that filled in as interim head coach during Jim Harbaugh's 2-3-game suspensions during the regular season. Look, I think he's getting this job. It makes too much sense for Michigan to keep the guy who's already on the staff, who's highly thought of. I think you're fine. I think you're safe. I feel confident in saying that by the time you listen to this episode, Sharon Moore might have already been named the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, which honestly, like, would be a good thing also, because then we don't have to deal with, okay, well, now Michigan's stolen another head coach. Now another school has to find a new head coach, and then another, and then the cycle continues. I'm done with the head coaching cycle. It's almost February. Let's be done. As a Big 12 podcast, you might be wondering who we are rooting for this weekend in the NFL playoffs. Did you know there's playoffs on Sunday? AFC NFC championship games. Four teams left, two teams for the Super Bowl. So you might think that we are cheering for San Francisco and Kansas City because we want to see Brock Purdy and Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. And personally, yes, that is what I'm rooting for personally. I am a Niners fan. I do like the Chiefs. I am not a diehard any team in the NFL. So I like to see certain things. But I grew up a fan of the Niners and the Chiefs because of my grandfather. We were big Joe Montana fans. He grew up in Kansas City area. I like both. When there was the San Francisco, Kansas City Super Bowl a couple of years ago, I was in hog heaven. I would love to be in hog heaven again. But as a Big 12 podcast, as an official 10-12 network stance, we should be rooting for as many players from the current Big 12 teams to make the Super Bowl as possible. Like, we want the graphics about how many Big 12 teams are in the Super Bowl. We want those graphics. We want those being posted. Those are positives. So for that to happen, it means we're actually rooting for Baltimore and San Francisco to win their prospective games. I get it. Patrick Mahomes. I understand. And if I did my math correctly, Baltimore has 13 players on their roster from teams that are currently in the Big 12. Kansas City actually has the second most of the four teams remaining at 12. The problem is Baltimore and Kansas City face off. Now, I could say, like, what difference does it make one player? You should root for Kansas City. And I am. Like, I want Kansas City to win. Please understand. I want Kansas City to win. But I'd be perfectly fine if you throw one more player from the Big 12 and all those cool, like, how many players from each conference are playing in the Super Bowl? If you get Baltimore and San Francisco, that number will be 23 because there are 10 from San Francisco. There are only four Big 12 players on the Detroit roster. 10 for San Francisco, 12 for Kansas City, 13 for Baltimore. So definitely San Francisco. Brock Purdy, come on, y'all. And look, I'm going to be happy if Kansas City makes it. But just for the graphics sake, pro Big 12, we're going to be good with Baltimore goes there. But definitely San Francisco over Detroit. Like 10 versus 4. This is easy. I've got some thoughts on basketball. I want to talk about TCU for just a minute. Congratulations. I'm glad they finally got to play a game again, the women's team. Got a nice 6-point win over UCF at home. Good. We were moving on. This issue of them having to forfeit two conference games can just be swept under the rug. That's what they wanted. They wanted to move on and move past it. Nope. They got the win, and then they needed an ESPN special about, like, oh, look at this incredible story. Look at this amazing thing that's happened. They had seven players. The volleyball player who joined the team played one whole minute. They played seven players on the current roster in that game and got a 6-point win over one of the worst teams in the Big 12 on the women's side. I do not believe that something evil, malicious, whatever is going on. I understand why Kansas State fans and Iowa State fans are upset about what happened last week. And you can be upset. That's fine. I'm not going to buy the conspiracy theories. I'm not going to. So if you want to sweep it under the rug and just move on, TCU, by releasing little to no information about it, fine, cool, okay. It's weird, it's suspect, but whatever, let's roll, let's move on. If you're then going to allow ESPN to air some segment about you, about this underdog story of overcoming adversity and injury to this roster, you're putting yourself back in the limelight. You cannot have it both ways. You can't give as little information as possible and try and just hope this goes away and then try and take a few minutes to crow about all you've had to overcome to get a 6-point win at home over a bad team. Choose a narrative and stick to it. Choose a direction and stick to it. Because you can't have it both ways. You can't sweep it under the rug and act like it's not a big deal and then try and gain sympathy and awareness for something. That stinks to high heaven to me. There's hypocrisy in that that I don't like. Either tell the story or don't. All right. I'm not going to get into the whole stuff about WWE on Netflix and what that means for college athletics because I don't think the two things correlate. I don't think that works that way. Like, WWE is one package. College football is not. It's too complicated. Let's get to some of your questions that you asked. I asked for questions. I said I'd try to answer a few on the show tonight. So that's what I'm going to do. Thank you. This is the first time I've really got some decent responses, or like responses. And I don't mean like decent in quality, although there's some quality questions. And I can't answer all of them because I don't have an answer for all of them, but I will try and address each of them. All right, first up, of course he was the first one to respond. Of course he was. Scott Wildcat, host of Bosco's Boys, part of the 10-12 network. Quote, if you were the czar of Big 12 football scheduling, what philosophies would you use to put together dates and times? Cannot change the opponent cycle already determined, i.e. a rivalry week, specific types of games on Thursday, Friday, certain games at certain times, etc. A rivalry week would be a good thing. I think putting all of the rivalry games that we have on one weekend would be a smart thing. You get Sunflower Showdown. You get whatever Arizona State is called. You get the Holy War between Utah and BYU. You get the Revivalry. I'm still calling it the Revivalry. You can call it the Blue Bonnet, whatever you want. I don't care. And I would put that later in the year, around the time that the SEC typically does SoCon Saturday. That's the weekend they're going to take off. That's the weekend you should put as your rivalry weekend. I understand most of the time we like to play those as the last week of the regular season, but I think it plays better from an excitement level if we're playing those games then. And then I would look at other opportunities for games on the schedule that you could consider quote-unquote rivalry games between teams that you could call a rivalry and put them there. If West Virginia and Cincinnati are playing that season, then that game should go that weekend. If Texas Tech and Oklahoma State are playing that season, then that game should go that weekend. I would then look at games that you have not decided are rivalries, but which fan bases could get behind a quote-unquote rivalry. Yeah, I don't want to hear West Virginia fans about Cincinnati. Just cram it. I don't need for this. I don't need that. And fill that weekend up with as many games that at least Big 12 fans can get behind together. I don't have a lot of thoughts from beyond that. Like, I like an idea of a rivalry weekend, but that's about it. I care more about matchups than I do like when things fall on the calendar. All right. Senior Cincinnatus, I think that's how it's pronounced, is Cincinnati's upcoming home game against UCF a must-win for the Bearcats. Thank you for sending me this one because it leads into the conversation about Big 12 men's basketball. Because yes, it is for Cincinnati. It's absolutely a must-win. Why is it a must-win? I know that I have been pushing the 12 from the Big 12, and I'm still going to hold out hope that 12 Big 12 teams can make the tournament. But I also don't think it's realistic. On Wednesday, Joe Lunardi put out his most recent bracketology. We can quibble about how accurate it is, whatever. He had 10 Big 12 teams in. 10. Texas was and Kansas State were the last four byes. TCU was among the last four in. Cincinnati was among the first four out. I think if you're going to get 11 teams in, the number 11 has to be Cincinnati. Now look, they're sitting at number 37 in the net as of the time of this recording. Cincinnati is 33rd in KenPom at time of this recording. For 11 teams, Cincinnati has got to protect home court. You have to win those games. You have to win home games. You need to beat UCF, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. Like, the thing for everybody at this point is this. Don't lose to OSU. Don't lose to West Virginia if you can avoid it. Especially not at home. You got to protect home court. You have to protect home court. So do I think Cincinnati versus UCF is a must-win for Cincinnati? Is it truly a must-win? You have plenty of opportunities for more wins on the calendar. Absolutely plenty of games still to play. But a home game against UCF, who's down in the 70s in the net, yeah, that's a must-win. You cannot lose home games, and you cannot lose home games to teams like UCF, Oklahoma State, who you're going to get home later in the season, West Virginia, who you're going to get home later in the season. It's too hard to win games on the road. You need to win those games. Heck, I would say they've got UCF at home, and then they go on the road to West Virginia. Both of those are must-wins. You don't want to lose those. You don't want to lose those if you're Cincinnati, if you're going to find yourself on the right side of the bubble. So, yeah, I think it's a must-win. Because, yes, there's plenty of opportunities for good wins, but you don't want to take any of what would be considered the few subpar losses in the Big 12 either. Allison Renner, friend of the pod, can anyone stop the powers of Gap Goat? Her answer is no, I agree. No, they cannot. Real one. Brant Phillips, is Adi Crooks, Iowa State Women's Basketball Center, versus a potentially healthy Ioka Lee, the most underrated matchup of players in all of college basketball this season? Yeah, if you're going to go underrated, yes. And the fact that we might only get one, if that, like we were going to get two. They face each other twice this season. Kansas State and Iowa State face each other twice this season. We will not have Ioka Lee for the first matchup. It's doubtful we'll have a 100% healthy Ioka Lee for the second matchup. Like, the best chance we have of that occurring would be if the two meet up in Kansas City for the Big 12 Women's Championship. Like, I was so looking forward to that matchup. All the Big 12 fans were. To not get it now is really disappointing. So if we can have that, if Ayoka Lee can be healthy, as close to 100% as possible, and we could get that in Kansas City, oh, man, that would be a hell of a matchup. And I hope to God for women's basketball fans like that we can. That would be incredible. Incredible. Miles Giller, who helps out with Sons of UCF, asks, biggest surprises in men's and women's basketball so far this season, good and bad? I mean, I think you have to say BYU is a good surprise. I know they're 2-4 in conference play, but it's still a good team. They've been competitive even the losses. I would consider them a good surprise. I mean, Kansas State being good is not a surprise. Texas Tech, I guess you could call them a surprise because they're 4-1 and sitting atop the conference standings. You can call that a surprise. I still think BYU being as good as they are this season is a surprise. Bad surprise? I can't believe Oklahoma State's as bad as they are. Like, you could say Texas. They're 3-3 in conference play now, 14-5 overall. Like, they're on the right side of the bubble. Like, okay. OSU is 0-6 in conference play, 8-11 overall. Yeah, they've had some close losses. They've had games they've blown. OSU is not good. For them to be this bad, like, I didn't think they were going to be especially good this season. For them to be as bad as they are, it's bad. They get West Virginia at home this Saturday. That might be their best chance for a win the rest of the season. They've got a home game against UCF at the end of February. They get BYU at home mid-February. Like, outside of that, are they going to go winless? No. But for them to be as bad as they are, that one is a bit surprising for the bad side. On the women's side, I'm not sure I'm surprised based off of preseason expectations. Iowa State is ahead of schedule, so if you want to call them a surprise, sure. I'm not surprised when Iowa State is good, so that the fact that they're 6-2 in conference play is not surprising. Kansas State being this good, okay, maybe a little bit. Maybe I didn't expect them to be 8-0. I mean, it was surprising to see them beat Baylor earlier in the week without Ayoka Lee, which was absolutely incredible. But from a positive standpoint, I'm not sure anyone surprises me in the Big 12. From a negative, from a down, from how bad they are, Kansas being 10-9, 3-5 in conference play, there are much higher expectations for them this season. We've talked about that with Andy. I think Kansas being as down as they are this season is surprising with everything that they had coming back. Kamiar Mahrabian asks, at the end of the basketball season, what are the Big 12 standings for the men? Who the hell knows? How do you come to me and ask me that question? Like, have we not done this enough times to know that, like, good luck? I'm not going to predict actual standings. I'm not that dumb. I'm not going to do it. This from Tanner Wilson. From men's basketball especially, who's the Big 12's strongest NBA prospect? I from what I can tell, and please understand, like, I can't sit here and judge the skill of players, and I can't watch every single game. But from what I have gathered, Jacoby Walter of Baylor is still the projected to go the highest of any Big 12 player. That would be my pick. I think Yes Missy is also going to be a first-round pick. And then Kevin McCullough. I think those are your top three. But I think Jacoby Walter is going to be the first name called. Corey asks, if everyone in the new Big 12 could choose a single conference rival, who would it be? The funny thing about that is I don't think everyone would pick the same team. And schools and fans have two different opinions on that. Because I think Kansas State's going to say Kansas, which they should. And Kansas play Kansas State. I think Iowa State fans would say Kansas State. But, like, they don't want to be the second fiddle. So then they got to look around and say, well, maybe Cincinnati. Because, you know, West Virginia doesn't want to say Cincinnati. But Cincinnati would probably say West Virginia. And, like, that's a good question I want to have to do some research on, because I don't think it's as simple as, well, it's these two teams. No. I don't think everyone would say, there's necessarily everyone would just say each other. Like, BYU and Utah, yeah, absolutely. Ryan K. asks me to put to bed the foul in the end of Houston and BYU that was controversial. I'm not going to do that. And that's about it. Those are the questions. All right. Thank you to everybody sending those in. Yeah, I hope you liked the answers that I gave you. We'll do that again soon. So if you've got questions, you want to pitch them now, you can, or save them up and we'll do another Q&A before an interview sometime soon. I've got some exciting stuff for next midweek, to kind of really start diving in on Big 12 softball. I'm so excited for this season to get underway. I'm excited for you to hear the interview we have coming up here in just a minute with Coach Craig Snyder. I'm also super excited for you to go and shop with our friends at Charlie Hustle, vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City. I'm not going to do the spiel. I'm not going to do the read. I know everybody's podcast is someone's first, or every podcast. I'm going to get that line right on the first try one of these times. I swear, just once I'm going to do it. Look, charliehustle.com. If you love vintage collegiate apparel, then go check out what they've got right now. They've actually got a Coaches versus Cancer collection going on right now. Funds go to help support finding an end to cancer. They're going to help the American Cancer Society. There are four t-shirts. Two are SEC coaches. There's also a Jerome Tang one that's fantastic, and a Bill Self one that is fantastic. Go check those out on the site right now. Go to charliehustle.com. It's right there on the homepage. It's the Coaches versus Cancer shirts. They are fantastic. It's just the latest of the great stuff that Charlie Hustle keeps putting out for Big 12 schools. They've got everybody currently in the Big 12 except for Cincinnati. They're trying. They're working. Cincinnati fans keep badgering them. I know that they're working on the corner schools to come in, that are coming in. They've already got Colorado, and they've got some dang good stuff. So here's what I want you to do. Go to charliehustle.com. Peruse your favorite school, be it Baylor or Kansas, Oklahoma State, Houston, West Virginia, TCU, whoever. Find you a couple things. Use the promo code 101215, TEN1215, and get 15% off all non-sale items. Maybe you want an NIL player tee with some players from Kansas or Kansas State. Maybe you want some really cool varsity jackets from multiple schools. Maybe you're a Big 12 wrestling fan. Maybe you're an Oklahoma State wrestling fan, because they've got a t-shirt just for you. They put out a collection of basketball hoodies for just about every Big 12 school. They're pretty stinking cool. So go to charliehustle.com, use that promo code 101215, save 15% off all non-sale items. Go check it out today. Support Charlie Hustle. They support us. We love them. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right, Craig Snyder, fantastic interview. Let's talk about Texas Tech softball. Let's find out why they have a tumbleweed contest. Let's get to it. Softball season is almost here for players. I'm sure they are itching to finally get on the field and play some games and not just continue to practice. We got a few more weeks to go, but for the 10-12 podcast, it's time to start talking about softball, previewing softball. I'm very excited today. On our list of coaches we didn't get last year, we got most of the Big 12 coaches, both at the time, current and future. One of them we didn't get was Texas Tech head coach, Coach Snyder. And I am thrilled that we're going to kick off this season by welcoming him to the show. Coach Snyder, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here and excited to talk some softball with you guys. And sorry you missed me last year. I must have been hiding or something. There's no telling how we crossed paths or didn't cross paths. So I'm excited that we can connect on this today.
But year one, you got a lot to figure out, a lot to learn, a lot to kind of deal with. It's understandable. You're a busy guy. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, you know, first time head coach, that's for sure. That was probably chapter 56 on things that maybe I would have done differently as a head coach first year.
I'll start with this then. Like, what do you feel like from as a first time head coach after your first season? What are some of the biggest things you feel like you've learned as a head coach after 1 year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a ton. I think I could write a book on it. But at the same time, like, you know, what I didn't realize, because again, I've been on one side of the ball for 23 years. I was a hitting coach, right? And so it was offense, 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 this and that, you know. But now it's also no, it's the management of everything now. You touch everything. You touch the defense, pitching, you know, boosters, you know, everything that is involved in your program, you're a part of. And you know, you don't realize at the time constraints that goes with that. And, you know, there's days you look up and your day's filled with meetings and things to take care of the program that really has a lot to do with the program and growing the program, but doesn't have a lot to do with the tactical side of softball. Right. And that's always been my life, has been the tactical side. And so the management of that was definitely a change for me. And, you know, something I enjoy. I've really enjoyed that piece. But, you know, there are days that I think, man, I would just love to be back in the cages all day and hanging out with the hitters, you know, but that's not the case anymore.
Coaching is the fun part. The rest of it's just, you know, the things that they pay you for, right?
And that's but then those are the things that mean the most sometimes too. So you got to really pay attention to those details.
And I see as college athletics change, I mean,
more and more keeps adding to getting added to the role for head coach, as far as, you know, that CEO role we talk about with football all the time, of now you've got NIL and you've got transfer portal and you've got different philosophies on roster management, because it's not just about getting these kids out of high school to come to your team. Like, it is interesting, being a first time head coach. It's kind of like, to me, like growing up in the smartphone era. Like, you don't remember the time beforehand. You have been coaching during the time beforehand, obviously. But like, as a head coach in this area, do you feel like you were better suited to handle some of the challenges that coaches are dealing with now, having kind of come up in that time period, as opposed to having done it one way for so long and having to deal with all this change?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think it's ever evolving, you know. And I talk about this a lot with other coaches, you know, whenever I speak and stuff. Like, you know, the generation of kids are always different, right? Like, how you were raised was different than how your parents were raised, and how your parents were raised were different than how their parents were raised. Like, we continue to evolve, and I think in coaching, that's kind of the same way. You know, the rules are ever changing, right? The landscape of the NCAA and NIL, it's ever changing. So we have to learn to adapt, and you're kind of drawing your own maps as you move on, right? Like, you know, we want to be able to kind of fall back on things that we know and do that. And a lot of things you can, but then there's so many other things. It's like, well, okay, and this is uncharted water for us. And I definitely feel that way. Prior, since COVID, I think as an industry and in all coaching professions have had to operate differently, look at things differently, manage rosters differently, manage kids differently. It's changing for sure. And what we're talking about right now will probably change by the time next year happens. You know, I mean, there's just more rules going to be put in place or less rules put in place. And so you just continue to evolve with that. And but I think that's what makes a great coach or a head coach is, like, you are adaptable and you can evolve with the times and continue to maneuver through the challenges, you know, of the newness.
Yeah, they say the only constant is change. So I think that continues to apply each and every year. You mentioned hitting coach. Let's talk about this team. You come from an offensive background, and this team was a lot of fun to watch last year because of how much offense there was. Ton of runs, ton of home runs, a lot of excitement. Three of your biggest hitters, I think, from last season are gone. Peyton Blythe, Mackenzie Herzog, Ellie Bailey are all gone. That's a lot of production to replace. That's 108 RBI and 32 home runs. Where do you see on this roster those runs, those hits, those home runs coming from?
Yeah, I mean, those three were just integral parts, right? And it was so cool to see Ellie Bailey do it, what she did as her senior year, you know, to hit 16 home runs. And, you know, I think the prior year she had two. And so she really got to grow up in the system as great. And obviously Mackenzie Herzog, you know, had the honor to coach, you know, her for many years, and to see her be a part of our program, it was incredible and a big loss for us. And then Peyton Blythe, you know, I mean, Peyton came in and, like, just adapted to what we're doing and had a phenomenal year for us. And that's a lot of production. It is, you know, and I think as we talked about evolving, you know, it's funny, last year going into the season, you know, we didn't know what the identity would be, right? We didn't know that it was this a doubles team, was a home run team, was this a base running team? What, we got to play small ball, we got to manufacture, how do we do this? And it kind of evolved into a team that, you know, was going to be a high slug team, right? It was going to be losing the ball over the fence. It was going to be doubles. It was, you know, that was what it kind of became. And so I go into this year, and I don't know if it's about replacing it. It's about, okay, how do we score those runs again, right? And so how do we put ourselves in a position to score those runs? So it may look different this year, right? It may look different than, you know, we're a big double teams or home run team. We may be more, you know, a manufacturer team and have to really situationally hit, you know, and run bases. I think each team continues to evolve, and I think that's what makes a really good hitting coach. It's not always a cut and dry, this is what we're going to do. It's like, well, no, this is – the personnel we have this year, this is some things we can do differently to probably score more runs. Let's go that route. And so, I don't know, going into this year, I'd love to have that kind of piece again. And I think we're going to have some kids that have really developed, which I'm excited about, and some youth coming in that I'm excited about. But, you know, again, it could be completely different than last year. So it's not really about replacing as much as just really being able to evaluate what you have right now and how does that fit the mold of scoring more runs.
One player you do bring back who is huge for this program is Kaylee Wyckoff, who had an incredible freshman season. I mean, she came out of nowhere for all of the fans outside of Texas Tech. I'm sure you saw the potential when you got her there in Lubbock. having her back, a lot of excitement about her, a lot of anticipation for what she'll do this year. Where do you see she has grown the most from last year heading into this season?
I mean, I think the maturity factor, right? I mean, you know, as a freshman, it's always going to be a roller coaster ride. And her fall of freshman year, what was that for her? And, you know, she struggled a lot in the fall, which is always kind of a good thing for a freshman because they have to figure out the failure piece. Because when you get to something, you're going to fail. It's just a matter of when and how, right? And so, you know, and so for her, she got to figure that piece out and then goes out into the spring and just has a phenomenal season, right? And now the next piece is like, okay, because a lot of the questions are going to be, how do you follow that up? How do you do those things? And we've sat down and we've really talked about that a lot. And, you know, it's not really about following it up. It's about staying present and continuing your process of, you know, what got you to that point, right? And so I've seen a lot of maturity out of her this fall and this spring, and I'm excited to see what she can do. You know, she's what a talented ball player and a talented hitter and catcher. And so she's a great addition to our program, there's no doubt.
You feel like she's ready to handle that pressure that's now going to be put on her in her second year with coming back with the role she's going to have and the anticipation for her?
I do. Again, we've had a lot of conversations about that because that's not an easy thing, right? You know, success leaves clues, but, you know, success can also be a detriment too, you know, if you don't handle that right. And so just, you know, exactly what I've told her before is that, you know, what you did last year is exactly last year, right? It's about right now. It's about because people are going to try to pitch you different, right? Your name's now circled on that scouting report. They're going to try to get you out. So they're going to pitch you tougher. They're going to pitch around you more. There's going to be a lot of different ways to do it. And so you don't have to reinvent yourself. You just need to be ready to go in that battle. And again, just continue to stay present and adaptable as we move through this.
Let's talk about the mound. Obviously, last year, you used a lot of arms. I think it was one of the Oklahoma games. I think you threw like six different pitchers into one game. Just like there's a pitcher every inning. Just it was a fun strategy to watch to see how that played out. I mean, seven different pitchers threw in double digit games. You had eight pitchers in total for the season. Gone is Kendall Fritz. Gone is Erna Garland. Gone is McKinney Herzog. And then Morgan Hornback is also gone, but she's now on staff this season. So if do you plan to use that high number of arms again this season? And if so, who's going to step up and fill the innings that are lost for the players who are gone?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a big gap to fill, you know, especially losing the, you know, those arms for us last year. But I think, you know, we look at the landscape of softball right now. I think gone are the days where you jog out one pitcher and just run through an offense, right? And there's still a few out there that can do that. There's still some elite arms that can do that. But, you know, I think we even look at, you know, some of the teams that have made it to the World Series where, like, it takes a staff. It takes a staff that does different things. And what I'm really excited about this year is that we've really bought into that philosophy. We've trained that philosophy, and we've really seen these pitchers develop. You know, so I really look forward to seeing, you know, our arms out this year. Maddie Keel has been great all fall, all spring. Our transfer Maddie Wright, you know, coming from Charlotte, another great addition to our staff. You know, look at Liv Raines, who's done a great job for us, and Sage Hoover, and, you know, and Rancy Willis. Like, there's some arms right there, and then we've got a few freshmen that are going to step up as well. So excited to see what that brings. You know, again, all different looks, all different, you know, opportunities there. And I think the name of the game now is, like, how do we get outs, right? Like, that's it. Like, so just like, well, on the offense piece, we may have to adapt to try to score runs. On the defensive side, it's like, well, we're buying outs. So we have 21 outs. How do we get 21 outs? And if we put everybody in this hat right now, like, how can we mix and match this piece to get those outs that we need to keep these scores low so we can win more ball games? And that's what we're really working hard on this year. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of different looks again this year, because that's what we're trying to see. What we're seeing a trend, you know, offensively that you've got to change the looks up, right? You have to change it. And so we're going to continue looking in that direction this year.
Yeah. We talked about change off the top, and I mean, used to, you, if you had one stud, you're set. You know you're going to have a good season. You're probably going to be in Oklahoma City if you've got one of the tops. Now, like, even Oklahoma's got two, three players that you would start on any team, like, for a whole season. And they've got multiple of them. And so just having one great player is good. That's an important thing. You want that one reliable pitcher. But you know you need at least one, if not two more, to feel comfortable about making it through a season.
No doubt. And, again, those those horses, you know, they're a dime a dozen now, you know, and they're out there and they can do some things. And not to say that, you know, other pitchers can't make it a 7-inning game, because there's always going to be those games where you just, hey, you're feeling it, you're doing great, things are going your way. You roll with that, you know. But you know, you start to really look at how offensive change, you got to change looks, right? And it's no different than what we've seen in Major League Baseball for ever since the beginning of time, right? You got your opener, you got your middle or long relief, and then short relief, setup, and closer. You know, there's going to be different looks to continue to try to get hitters out. And so I think the technology has shown us that, and the game is starting to evolve to that, because hitting coaches are better, right? Offenses are better. So you got to really change the looks up and really, you know, try to keep them on their toes as much as possible.
I am a schedule junkie. I care way too much about paying attention to RPI and who you played and who's on the schedule and matchups. It's going to be different this year in the Big 12. Usually you had about 6 weeks of non-conference you had to fill. Now with a 10-team conference, everybody's playing everybody. We got a full round robin, which is awesome. We can talk about that in a minute. So fewer non-conference games to have to worry about. I'm curious your scheduling philosophy. Last year, I don't think you guys had a single midweek game once conference play started. I think you've got one, maybe two this season. What is your scheduling philosophy, both in non-conference and how you like to build that, and then whether or not to schedule midweek games during the conference slate?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, last year our non-conference was not as strong as we wanted it to be, and it's kind of what we were handed. So, you know, that's just part of the deal and stuff. And we picked up some games to help us out. But, you know, as you look at your conference, like, I mean, the name of the game is like, all right, how are we setting ourselves up for success, right? Now, success right now for Texas Tech is like, you know, we want to be a postseason team, right? So we're going to schedule a little bit differently than maybe a top five team right now. Top five team's going to go out preseason. They're going to schedule a juggernaut to get better. Well, we need to make sure we're doing that to get better too. And so we've got to really start to learn how to manage that piece. And so, you know, for us, midweeks, you know, Lubbock, Texas is not the easiest place to get to, or get, you know, sometimes easy. And it's when it comes to midweeks, you know, we're looking at 3 to 4 hours for the closest Division I school. And so, and that becomes a challenge for us. And so you start to weigh the factors of like, okay, is it important that we go play the game, or is it important that we, you know, get rest, you know, to get ready for these things? So if we do a good job, you know, preseason, then it's a lot easier, right? It's a lot easier, and we don't have to do as many, you know, midweek tournaments. And so that's our midweek game. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with that, you know. And then now too, the Big 12 is changing, right? I mean, so this year we brought in some great softball schools, you know, BYU, UCF, and Houston. So we bring them into the thing now, and now all of a sudden that's better competition. That already helps us straight away RPI wise, right? That helps us a lot. So that's a good thing. And then next year, obviously, you know, now we started adding some more perennial powerhouses with Utah, you know, just in the World Series. You know, Arizona, who is a perennial powerhouse in the World Series, and Arizona State, who's not as far off from making a World Series run. So it gets stronger and gets better. And so, you know, sometimes that's when you have to kind of look at those and go, okay, what does the program need at this moment, right? What do we need to have that's going to help us set ourselves up for postseason right now? And so I think it's, again, everything kind of changes. It's ever evolving. Your schedule is going to change. And so once we get that 25 schedule, it'll be interesting to see what our preseason looks like next year too, because we don't have that schedule yet. But when we do get it, I'm anxious to see what we can and can't do, and what that's going to look like.
I am excited about this year with the three new programs, and then I'm even more excited about next year with three additional. Even though you're losing Oklahoma and Texas, adding Utah, Arizona, Arizona State are three fantastic programs to add to this conference. Looking at this season, again, full round robin, everyone's playing everybody. I know from a coach's mindset, let's be honest. Like, coach's mindset is we want to go out and play everybody and beat everybody. We're not going to, you know, the mindset is not like we're not going to beat them. But it is hard in the Big 12 when Oklahoma is in your conference and you know, from a fan perspective, like, just go ahead and put three losses on your schedule because they lost one game all last season. They lost three games the year before that. It's really hard to beat Oklahoma. And then you add in Texas, who's also very, very good. Do you view not just the strength of the conference as better, but the fact that there is more depth to the conference from the top to bottom now with 10 teams? In my mindset, and I'm curious yours, like, the conference is better in part because it grew, but in part because it brought in better teams, but it brought in better teams who strengthened the RPI as a whole. And I think give everybody more opportunities to, I think gives the conference more opportunities to get more teams in the postseason. And not just because you have more teams, but more opportunity for everybody around, as opposed to who can knock off Oklahoma and get that win they need to help get them there.
No, I think that's exactly right, Philip. I mean, when you start to really bring in the caliber of these teams, now all of a sudden, I mean, you're going to have 10 to 11 teams in a conference that can all make a postseason run, right? And so you look at the success that we've seen, like maybe in the SEC over the past, you know, 6 or 7 years, you know, and almost every, not every year, but almost every year, they've gotten every team into the postseason, right? And so, and you think about that, like the last place team in that conference was still a 38 RPI, right? Because they get that opportunity to play these teams over and over again. And you know what? And there's always that off Sunday that you take down the number one team, right? And so, because it's not about who the better team is, it's about who plays the game better. And so, and sometimes you catch that rabbit's foot, right? And you catch them on the right time and you take down an Oklahoma, you take down a Texas, you know, but you only get a chance to do that if you play, right? And you get a better chance to do that if you play it three times. And so I get excited about that. I think you're dead on. I think this is only going to elevate our conference. It's only going to make us better because it gives us more opportunities to, you know, win big games. And so, and that's what I'm excited to see for sure.
I'm going to ask this, and you don't have to answer, but like BYU, Houston, UCF all joined the conference, all have had periods of success. Which one are you most excited to face this year?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, it's going to be a challenge on all ends, right? So we open up at BYU in Provo, Utah in March. So I don't know if that's going to, you know, it may be snowing then. I'm not sure, but it seems like it's going to be cold. I don't know. And because that presents something pretty cool for our kids too, to go to Provo, Utah. And from what I've seen, beautiful area, absolutely beautiful, right? And so then UCF comes to us next year. So they come to Lubbock, Texas. And so Orlando and Lubbock, Texas are completely different on opposite sides of the spectrum. So that'll be fun for them. And then, you know, Houston, you know, obviously that's a great one as well, because now a lot of our ball players are from the Houston area. They're from that's out part of Texas. So all of them bring their different challenges, you know, and I'm equally excited on all fronts for all three of them. So it's hard to answer that question really, but, you know, obviously different challenges and different dynamics for sure. And excited to kind of do that and get after that this year.
Yeah, I'm thrilled for this round robin. I'm curious if they'll keep the round robin next year. We don't know. Once you have 11 teams in the conference and you play 10 full conference weekends, if we're going to take one off, I'm curious what the Big 12's thinking there. I'll be excited to see it. I want to wrap up two last things and kind of talk about the future of this Texas Tech program. You signed the number 2 rated 2024 recruiting class according to Extra Inning Softball. Now that means, everyone gets confused, like 24, they're here this year. No. They will come in the fall of 24 and be part of the 2025 schedule. It always throws me off with signing classes and seasons and so on and so forth. But you sign what is the number 2 rated class according to Extra Inning Softball. That is absolutely fantastic. Again, it'll be another year before we see him actually on the roster. What are you selling in Texas Tech? What is it about Texas Tech that is attracting this level of talent to Lubbock and to this program?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we've said from the beginning, like, so I think we're very honest with ourselves. Like, you look around the country and you look at programs that you bring on these visits and it's the fancy things and all the stuff and the sales pitch and thing. And, you know, I think what separates us is that's not us. Here's who we are, right? We are West Texas. We are a blue collar community. We are a farming community. We're a ranching community. We are a Red Raider Nation. Our fans love it. And so, and I tell them, I'm like, listen, like, you don't understand how special it is until you get here. And when you get here and you see it and you feel it, it's different. And so we always talk about that for a little bit. And it kind of goes into our core values of what we talk about with our players. You know, I always kind of laugh, but it's, you know, every team says, oh, we're a family. Oh, we're a family. Oh, we're a family. And I tell our players all the time, I tell our staff and in the recruiting, it's like, we're not going to hear us talk about it. We're going to live it every day, right? We're going to live family, because literally nobody sits around the dinner table and looks around and goes, we're just a family. Yeah, you live it every day, right? You live it. And so you walk into our facility and we've got dogs running around. We got kids running around. I mean, I always describe it. It's like dinner at grandma's house on Sunday, right? It's just chaos. It's just part of it. But that's what life is, right? And that's what a family is. And so you try to, and so it's kind of interesting. Somebody asked that question. Well, how do you instill that? You do what you do every day. You know, this is the family piece of what we do. And so, you know, I mean, even last year we had the dog run on the field in the middle of the game. You know, it was that happens. Is this funny? And so, I don't know. I mean, so I think what recruits are seeing is when they come out here, they fall in love with that piece, and then they get, I think they get excited about what we're building, right? You know, from a facility standpoint and just a, you know, a softball standpoint, like this is a place you can win, and you can win and do a great job. And oh, by the way, you get to do it in a great conference. And so, I don't know. And now that the Big 12 has such a big thumbprint from East Coast to West Coast, it just expands what we can do because you get to play at home, you get to see it, you're on TV. And so I think Commissioner Yormark has done a phenomenal job of that as well. But, you know, this is a place for great ball players to come, you know, and I think they're starting to realize that. That class that we signed is very special. I'm excited for them when they get here on you know, here next fall. And so I think it's going to be a competitive class that, you know, is really going to set the mark for Texas Tech softball and where we're headed.
All right, I got to end on this. Explain to me the tumbleweed contest.
So yeah, I've been getting this question a lot. So it's so funny. As anything sometimes starts, like last year, I mean, we're all new to West Texas, right? And I always tell people, like, you know, if you're not from Texas, like you think it's cowboys and tumbleweeds and ranches and cattle, like that. That's what you think if you're not from the state, right? And honestly, 95% of that state is not that, right? It's not that. You go to these metroplexes and stuff. That's not it. Well, we are that. That's what Lubbock is. We are that, right? And so tumbleweeds are a thing in the spring. I mean, they take off, and I mean, I was just as shocked as anybody. So last year, to have some fun, we were really kind of in that segment of like, hey, let's be all in for the program, right? So on a Friday, I said, hey, ladies, all weekend, I want you to stop, find the biggest tumbleweed you can find and bring it to the field. We'll have an award for as the biggest tumbleweed, right? So we bring it in. And Katie Wyckoff won it the first year. So it brings this just massive, huge tumbleweed in, right? And we talked about, you know, one, being all into the program. We also talked about the lifespan of a tumbleweed, right? What it's about. Because I did the research on it, and I was like, let me just find out what this is about. Well, it's not native to the Americas. It came from Russia in the 1850s. And so they had shipped over some flaxseed over to South Dakota. Well, somehow some Russian thistle got mixed up in that flaxseed. Well, that's what a tumbleweed is a Russian thistle. So, and it loves desolate areas. It loves areas with that more dirt, right? And so it thrives in that. So a tumbleweed grows for a year or so, and then it dies off in the winter. And when it does, it breaks off from the stem and it just, you know, it tumbles. But when it tumbles, it spreads its seeds everywhere, right? I mean, it just continues to just flourish even after that. So we talked about that just in a program, like, you know, being able to leave your mark in a program, right? Like, you know, you're going to have this short time here, these 4 years, but you know, what you do now is going to be very fruitful for people in the future if we continue to grow the program. And so we had the tumbleweed trophy, right? We handed it out, and then it became a thing. So every week, somebody else will hand the trophy out to one of their teammates, right? Some words of affirmation, like, hey, I saw so and so doing this. This really meets our core values. So I think so and so deserves this trophy. So they get the trophy. And then they have to practice being interviewed. So we bring a camera out and, you know, say, hey, so and so, tell us about winning the Tumbleweed Trophy. And they have to talk about, you know, and then they're being interviewed. So we're practicing that piece too and learning how to interview on, you know, in front of the camera. So there's a lot of cool things that it checks the box for. But then it became the same. So this year was our second annual tumbleweed contest, and it seems to even gather even more notoriety now. So it'll be continue to be a thing, and I think we're actually releasing too some funny spoof videos are coming up. We're going to do a kind of a between the ferns type spoof, but it's going to be between the tumbleweeds. So it should be pretty good, and it should be a good laugh for everybody.
That's awesome. Yeah, the post showed up on social. I'm like, I'm gonna say, why is Texas Tech softball talking about tumbleweeds? Like, okay, this is good. This is the kind of content we need, is fun and engaging stuff. So nice job there. Always love to see something silly turn into something impactful and meaningful, especially to each program. And so it's not Coach Snyder, thank you for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck to your team this season. We'll be following very closely. Like my hope is like we got like 6 or 7 teams in the Big 12 in the postseason, and so I expect to see you guys there. So
Absolutely.
come on,
Absolutely.
Red
Thank you
Raiders.
so much. Absolutely. I appreciate your time today, and Thank you for everything you guys do for our sport. We appreciate you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.